Good evening. Welcome to Access City Hall for Wednesday, October 11th, 2006. I'm your host, Stu Levitan. It's nice to have you with us. If you're watching live on City Channel 12, we invite you to join the conversation by dialing 261-9114. If you're watching a tape rebroadcast or video streaming from the World Wide Web, you obviously can't make that call, but thanks for turning on and tuning in anyway. If, as it has been said, children are our future, the Madison School District has an awful lot to say about the tomorrows that our city and state will face. With an annual budget of over $300 million, larger than the City of Madison operating budget, the Madison School District is an awfully important employer and provider of one of the most basic services in our society. And we have with us tonight two of the leaders of that board, Superintendent Art Rainwater and School Board President Johnny Winston, Jr. Thanks very much. Gentlemen, for being with us
tonight.
Thank
you for having us.
When we scheduled this conversation a month or so ago, we thought we'd have a nice start of the school year conversation about the upcoming referendum, some budget issues, the high-profile social issues that always seem to inflame talk show hosts and excite the populace. But since then, obviously, cruel and hard reality has intruded on our discussion, and the question arises not so much our children are future, but what kind of future can we offer our children? And indeed, do all our children have a future in our schools? And we're going to start with the very difficult question of how to keep our children and employees in the school system safe. Art, a few weeks ago, in light of the school shooting in Weston in Cazenovia, you wrote an open letter to school district families in which you said, we refer to the uneasy realization that this can happen anywhere at any time. Are our school children safe in the Madison School District?
Well, I certainly think they are. We take it very, very, we take our safety very, very seriously. We work at it. But I think the truth is, if you look at our society, that I'm not sure any of us can assure ourselves that we're totally safe at any time, anywhere. And our schools are very much a reflection of that society. To the extent that it's possible, we certainly work very hard at safety. And if you look at the kinds of incidents that we're talking about, there are really very few of these. They are extremely disturbing when they occur. They certainly get a tremendous amount of publicity, and they should. But they are very, very rare. And they've actually, homicides in schools have actually decreased over time. So from that standpoint, they are a rare occurrence. But when they occur, they are so devastating that I think they make us all sit back and take notice.
Is it something that keeps you up at night?
Absolutely. There certainly isn't a day go by that I don't worry about that. We have all of our schools are connected with a security phone that they can call into our central office, to our security office, and I can hear that phone ring. And every time that phone rings in our central office, you get that start. What is this? So, yes, I worry about it. I think all of us do.
What steps has the district taken to improve security within the system?
Well, we've been working at this a long time. We are very, very aware and take very seriously the fact that many of these incidents occur when children are disaffected from school. And so we have psychologists. We try to be very, very alert to children who are being harassed, and we have certainly anti-harassment and anti-bullying programs within our school district, but we try to be very alert to children who are in that situation. We also work very hard, and I think just as important, one of the things that we said in the letter and that since has been talked about a lot is create a climate in which the students in the school feel comfortable going to an adult when they hear something. In many, many of the cases involving children, that child has told someone else that something's going to happen. This is, you remember, what happened in Green Bay, where a child actually came forward. So we work very hard to try to be sure that our children know that they're safe, know that it's an expectation, that if they hear something that will endanger the students or the staff, that they come forward. And students will do that. I mean, students don't want this to occur any more than anybody else does.
Johnny Winston, in your real life, I'm not sure if it's a day job because with you 24/7,
right?
Guys, you're a firefighter, so you're involved in the protective services. Are you entirely comfortable with the working relationship between the school district and the police and other law enforcement agencies, and to the extent that fire is involved as well, to have a fully coherent and integrated protective environment for the system, the schools?
I believe so. I believe that the school district has worked very hard to continue to have a positive relationship with the police department, particularly the police chief, Noble Ray. I believe our new director of security, or coordinator of security, Luis Udice, was obviously a former Madison police officer. And I think that really helps the school district. It gives the district and the police department kind of working together to make sure that our schools are safe and our communities are safe as well, because we know that a lot of the issues that happen with our young people happen out in the community. And if there's somebody out in the community, like a social worker from Dane County or someone from just the police department, they can make sure that they're in contact with the educational resource officer who works at our high schools and make sure that some of these issues can get taken care of ahead of time before they get into schools. But I'm very comfortable with our relationships with police department and fire department as well. October is fire safety month, and the fire department is at every school and teaching kids about fire safety. So I'm happy about that.
You'll probably get a commendation in your PFA office for studying that. Very, very good. I have to admit, it's been a while since I've been in a Madison school building. What sort of physical security elements are there? Are there metal detectors? Are there police in the schools? Are there security guards? What actually do we have in our system?
Well, start with personnel. We do have a Madison police officer called an education resource officer in each of our high schools. They're full-time there. They are attached to the school and work with us in the police department. We have 14 security assistants that cover all of our high schools and cover some of our middle schools. We now, and really since Columbine, have locked all of our doors except one so that there's not direct access into our building except for one door. We do have security cameras in our high schools that look at various parts of the high school. We are... Again, one of the main security efforts I think we take, though, is really trying to be cognizant of our children and what they're experiencing and who they are. We do not have metal detectors in our schools. I have been in a school district with metal detectors, and certainly that's one of the immediate things that people that come to mind. But my sense of the school violence that we've had in this country up until now is I'm not sure the metal detector would have helped. The person coming in probably isn't going to stop the metal detector and says, oh, my goodness, there's a metal detector. I'm going to turn around. I'm afraid that the gunfire would start there at the metal detector. But there are people who believe differently than that. But we do not have metal detectors.
Johnny, of course, one of the things about the school, operating a school system, is that you are beholden to some extent to what happens in the state capitol. And,
right.
And one of the more eccentric state legislators, Frank Lassay from the Green Bay area, has recently proposed arming school staff or enabling school staff to be armed. Good idea?
I definitely disagree with that. I don't think we need any more guns in schools. And I believe that our teachers should be working with our young people, reading, writing, math, just all the subjects that young people need to take. And in terms of having guns, I just don't believe that's going to solve the problem. I agree with the superintendent, having a staff that understands our young people, listens to them, and when there are problems, can come forward and we can work on those issues. So I don't agree with Mr. Lassay.
Well, we're going to get to a proposal that State Representative Spencer Black has made along those lines of quite different way to ensure school safety. We've got a caller on the line, Robert from the East Side. Robert, are you with us?
I am. I'd like to hear what your guests have to say about this. One of the things that's bothered me in the, couple of weeks or so since the tragedy in Cazenovia is all the press and all the media attention to the young fellow that is responsible or allegedly responsible. I mean, I understand, it's a free press, and I understand that it's a troubled child and all that, but I can't help but think that people see this, and perhaps kids that might be kind of troubled see this and go, wow, that guy's famous, and I realize it's nothing that either of your guests can do or should do, but I'm just wondering what they think about all of the coverage and all of the, you turn this kid into he's never going to see the light of day again, I imagine, but turning him into a celebrity and just giving him his 15 minutes it just seems to me that if it was up to me, I would just soon not even print his name, you know, I mean, because why give him the notoriety?
Thank you, Robert.
I mean, I guess, you know, we are in a media hungry society. We want information. We want it now. And, you know, I don't, the young man in question obviously needed some help. And I would like to think that in terms of any school district to try to be proactive and trying to get young people help that need it. And some of the signs you can see may be coming. But as the superintendent said earlier, you know, it's difficult to, I mean, this could happen anywhere. But I do know that in terms of our school district, what our superintendent did was help the superintendent of Weston, of the school district there, ask for some help. And and the superintendent asked some of our staff to go to Weston School and to help. You know, we also had an increased police presence around our school, I believe, as well. So, you know, trying to be proactive in the approach, I think, is good. And it's unfortunate people want to be famous for negative things. So,
It almost sickens me to have to ask this question, but which is a more likely situation, the Casanova or situation where we've got a student doing something as a result of being bullied and some other emotional problems, or the Pennsylvania situation where you had an adult come in and do it? Which is a more can't use the word normal. Which is more likely?
The adult situation is pretty new. We really, at least during the time that I've been conscious of this and been worrying about it and thinking about it, we really haven't seen too much of the situation where you have an adult who comes into school, particularly and both those two were very, very similar in terms of what their motivation was and everything else. We haven't seen that before. So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, if you just look in the short term, obviously it would appear the adult thing is more likely. But again, to emphasize,
the adult thing or the student thing?
If you look at just the last incidents, there were two adult things and one student thing. But again, if you put it in the context of there are 58 million children in public education in the United States of America, and there are 15,000 school districts. And so this kind of occurrence, either adult or child, is rare. So from that standpoint, there haven't been enough out of them, I don't think, to predict. And going back to what Robert said, certainly one of the fears that I guess we all would have would be that you would begin to see the notoriety trigger this kind of thing among some other children. What we have seen is not a cluster of these that occur because of this, but what we have seen is the kind of, we see increases in bomb threats, for example. We see increases in those kinds of things almost any time one of these kinds of things occur. But so far, we haven't seen the clustering, for example, that we have seen, and I think everybody is aware of, that we see with suicides. When we have a child who commits suicide, your fear is that you'll get a cluster of suicides that will trigger several more. So far, we haven't seen that with this kind of incident.
Not to make light of it, but sometimes a bomb threat or a fire alarm is just a way to get out of a test.
Almost every time, it's a way to get out of a test. Or any of a number of other reasons, and you know, most bomb threats that we get in all other school districts, Green Bay being obviously the tremendous exception to that. Most of those are clearly false. We take them, every single one of them, seriously, and we have trained people in our district who are trained to go into school buildings and look for bombs.
That's a great job.
The superintendent is not one of them.
Board president either.
Former board members, that's who you get today.
Somebody.
I referred obliquely a moment ago to a proposal by Spencer Black to help school districts address some of the security concerns, essentially to let spending for security-related items and personnel be exempt from the levy limit, the revenue limits.
Right.
Good idea?
I definitely wholeheartedly agree with that and hope that that's something that our legislature will look at very seriously, and maybe something good will happen from it. You know, the revenue caps really restrict what school districts really can do. And we have about $250,000 that's invested in terms of the ERO position, and obviously much more than that with other security positions. And, you know, that money could be used to for our programming in our school district. And, you know, again, I think there's nothing more that people want is for their child to go to a safe school. And we want to be able to provide that for them. But Spencer Black's bill would help quite a bit.
Now, this was proposed a couple of years ago, wasn't
it? That's correct. It was proposed. It's one of those bills that is absolutely common sense. I mean,
well, then it ain't going to pass.
I'm sorry.
I mean, it's honestly hard to imagine why anybody would oppose it. Because right now, with the revenue caps the way they are, when you're faced with these two very, very important things you need to deal with, critical for children in our future, which is their education and their safety, and those two things under a revenue cap are in conflict with each other. If I increase security, I have to decrease the amount of money that I'm spending on education. So it makes all kinds of sense to move that outside the revenue cap. And Spencer Black's his bill places a limit on how much that can be, so it's not an open ticket. But it would allow us, as we need to increase what we need to spend on security and be sure we have the right things in place without jeopardizing our ability to deliver the quality of education that people want. So it makes all kinds of sense. I can't imagine why anybody would vote against it, but I feel absolutely sure somebody will.
Now, you've been superintendent for about 8 years. You have a ballpark guess of how much you've spent on security that has nothing to do with education or skill development or athletics or extracurriculars, just purely security issues?
Off the top of my head, I would say that we probably spend somewhere around $800,000 to $900,000 a year, with the primary costs being certainly for salaries of our education resource officers and our security assistants. We do some training every year that we pay for, but we were able to purchase our cameras and those kind of things that we have out of a grant that we received from the federal government several years ago. So my guess would be that we're in the $800,000 to $900,000 range.
Have there been any security ideas that you've wanted to implement but couldn't, either because of the cost or because of regulatory or statutory limitations on?
We really don't have any statutory limitations that I'm aware of, but certainly there are things that we would like to do. We would love to, for example, to increase our security assistant force so that we have better coverage in our high schools and our middle schools, and that would certainly be one of the first places I think that we would look. We would like to increase the video surveillance that we have at our high schools in terms of numbers of cameras and the way we man those cameras. But what more than that, and those are certainly things that we would look at and should increase in our school district, more than that, it's the ability to have the financial resources available to you as you learn more and more about this. Because every time one of these incidents occurs, we do a full debrief. We sit down with all of our people. We look at what happened. We try to find out as much as we can about it and say, okay, if that were to occur here, how would we deal with that? Do we have the right things in place? Are there other things that we can do? And we do that. We certainly did it after all three of these that occurred last week. We sit down and go over every bit of that and say, you know, where can we improve and what does this inform us? So it would give us the capability, I think, as we do learn things, because every one of these cases is completely different. And as we do learn things about this, it would give us some flexibility, I think, in terms of funding to be able to make some changes. One of the things about all these cases, too, is if you think about that, all the focus right now is on how we lock down the school and keep the kids safe inside the school from a gunman who comes into the school. But if you remember Jonesboro, they pulled the alarm and brought the kids out of the school. So you have to think about both of those kinds of scenarios as you deal with this.
Wow. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the referendum, which is coming up for vote
4 weeks from yesterday, or November 7th, depending on what day you're watching this. And we'll talk about some other social issues and other issues affecting the state of the city schools. The number is 2619114. We're talking school board president Johnny Winston Jr. and school superintendent Art Rainwater. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Adventures. There are amazing possibilities when you open your mind to reading. You can log on to the Library of Congress website and let the journey begin.
As long as we have
hope, prayer, and a little bit of time to get us there. Hope, prayer.
World Wildlife Fund.
As long as we have hope,
working around the world to build a future where people live in harmony with nature.
Hope, prayer, and time.
For more than 40 years, World Wildlife Fund has achieved lasting conservation results by working with local governments, communities, businesses, and scientists to save wildlife and wild places.
As long as we have
hope, prayer, a little bit of time to get us there. Hope, prayer, and time.
As long as we have
hope.
Please,
prayer,
help us save the world's most endangered animals and places.
Hope,
go to worldwildlife.org today. Thank you.
You taught him how to hit a baseball, how to hit a receiver, a 9-iron, even taught him how to hit the open man. But how much time have you spent teaching him what not to hit?
Back with School Board President Johnny L. Winston Jr. and School Superintendent Art Rainwater, who every time I talk to him poses the question, how long can one man maintain a Texas accent while living in Wisconsin? We'll find out. What we're going to do now is watch a six-minute video produced by the Madison Metropolitan School District on the upcoming referendum. It is on the ballot of November 7th, a $23.5 million referendum for to alleviate crowding on the west side, by building a new elementary school in Linden Park, and some refinancing of Leopold School, and take some other matters out from underneath the revenue cap. It is as straightforward a presentation of the issues.
Factual
and straightforward, yeah. And we'll have a discussion of it afterwards. I remind you the telephone number is 2619114, but don't call for the next 5.5 minutes because we'll be watching the video too. So, as they say, let's go to the tape.
The Madison Board of Education has unanimously called for a public referendum on November 7th to address over-enrollment in some Madison schools and required budget cuts due to the state-imposed revenue cap. The referendum question consists of three parts: construction of a new elementary school, moving the financing for the addition and renovation to Leopold Elementary School from underneath the revenue cap, and moving the refinancing of some school district debt from beneath the revenue cap. Each part of the referendum will affect the education tax levy. Let's take a look at each part of the referendum question. Rapid growth on Madison's west side will soon result in a shortage of elementary classrooms where the growth is. In the center of the fastest growing county in Wisconsin, the Madison School District has kept a close watch on population growth, housing developments, and shifting population density.
Within the three neighborhoods that are closest to the proposed school, we have three adopted neighborhood development plans, and in total those plans call for the construction of approximately 13,000 dwelling units upon full build-out. To put that into some perspective, in 2000, based on the 2000 census, the city of Middleton, for example, had a total of 7,400 dwelling units.
Our predictions have been accurate. Chavez Elementary School opened in 2001 at 54% of capacity. Now, Chavez is full, just as expected. A community task force has examined and explored numerous possibilities and weighed factors such as cost, transportation, and neighborhood continuity to find the most educationally sound and economical options for accommodating our students. They recommended a new school, and the board agreed. So, approval is needed to raise $17.7 million for construction and equipping of a new elementary school on the growing far west side, in the Linden Park neighborhood, west of County Road M. This revenue will come from property taxes. The cost to the owner of an average-priced home for this portion of the referendum will be $16.15 per year for 20 years. The second part of the referendum seeks to move the financing for current Leopold Elementary construction and renovation out from under the revenue cap. Leopold's enrollment has grown by 100 students in the last 4 years. That's 7% over capacity. In the next 4 years, 60 additional students are projected to come from its attendance area, which will put the school at 16% over capacity. The same community task force recommended building an addition for a new cafeteria and kitchen at Leopold, and converting the current cafeteria and kitchen into classroom space. The cost is $2.76 million. The Board of Education approved the recommended plan and provided funding for the project starting with this year's budget. Construction is currently taking place. The board then unanimously voted to ask for referendum approval to move the $2.76 million of funding out from under the revenue cap. The revenue cap is the state law that restricts the revenue a school district can levy from the property tax. Approval of the referendum frees up the Leopold project funding for other uses by the Board of Education. In this year's budget, and if the referendum passes, the Board of Education intends to place the Leopold project funding into the district's contingency fund. For this portion of the referendum, the cost for the average homeowner will be $3.17 per year for 16 years. In the final part of the referendum, the district seeks to move the refinancing of $3.1 million in existing debt from beneath the revenue cap. Referendum approval will provide relief by moving payments for this refinancing out from under the revenue cap. The result will free up operating funds and may reduce required budget cuts by an average of $516,000 per year for the next 6 years. For this portion of the referendum, the cost for the average homeowner will be $9.89 per year for 6 years. After combining the three parts of the referendum, the estimated property tax impact to the owner of an average-priced home will be $29.21 per year from 2007 to 2013. The cost is projected to decline over time, going down in 2013 and again in 2023. This three-part referendum question addresses the challenges of over-enrollment in schools in the west and southwest areas of Madison, and of working within the state-imposed revenue cap. The referendum election will be held on November 7th.
And we are back live with School Board President Johnny L. Winston, Jr. and School Superintendent Art Rainwater. We welcome your calls at 261-9114 if you are, in fact, watching this live on Wednesday, October 11th. If it's some other date than that, go ahead and make the call and let us know what happens. Now, I want to make, Art, you can answer factual questions, and, sure. And Johnny, you can actually advocate for us. So let's,
and
let's,
I will.
Let's start with how is this different from the previous unsuccessful effort at a referendum?
The referendum that failed last was to build a second school on the Leopold site. This particular referendum builds a new school on the far west side of town, an area that we call Linden Park. So from that standpoint, it's a different part of the city. This referendum also builds a small addition onto Leopold, which the board is already building. And to be clear, the board appropriated the money to build that addition to relieve the overcrowding there that eventually the failed referendum was to relieve permanently. This would take that money that's being paid for that out of our operating budget under the revenue cap and move it outside the revenue cap by refinancing it, freeing up money under the revenue cap. The third part of this referendum is completely new. It's not something that we've talked about before. The third part of the referendum is to refinance debt that we have from the state trust fund that's paid for under the revenue cap out of our operating budget that actually built about two or three additions, Hawthorne, Lincoln being two of those. Again, refinancing those, which will save about $97,000 in interest, and also move it outside the revenue cap. So the sum of those two frees up a little bit over $800,000 on the revenue cap. It does raise taxes. But it gives us more room under the revenue cap.
Yeah, and this is different. I think this referendum is different than the one that was before the voters a few years ago. It's different because I think what happened was the board recognized that the people in the community needed to have some stakeholding in what was going on in their schools. So put together a task force, West Memorial Area Task Force, PTO presidents, concerned members of the community, older people were involved, and plus the superintendent staff, and really tried to look at some of the key issues. And one of the issues that kept coming forward to the task force was growth. The west side is growing by leaps and bounds, and that there was just no question that a school needed to be built in the Linden Park area. The Leopold situation has been going on for a long time, and as a board member, I have to tell you that it was a very difficult decision when we look at Leopold and what was going on with their overcrowding. I believe the board felt that there needed to be some sort of relief, so the board appropriated the funds so that they could have a cafeteria so that kids aren't having lunch at 10:30 a.m. To me, that's unacceptable, having classes out in the hallway.
That's a great time.
These are our kids, these are our future, and you know, strings classes that are out in the hallway. I mean, that's just unacceptable, and I believe we can do better than that. And then the refinancing, again, I believe a lot of people have refinanced their homes when the interest rates are really good, and this is the same type of situation. And so I really think that as a package, I believe this is something that people can support and get behind and vote yes for on November 7th.
Yeah. There are some people who would say, wait a minute, this is so far west, some of the children going to this new school in Linden Park, they don't even live in the city of Madison.
Well, and we do hear that. We also hear it about Fitchburg. We hear it about other places. But the city of Madison and the Madison Metropolitan School District are two completely different entities, and we have different boundaries. There are certainly parts of the city of Madison that are in other school districts, particularly Middleton Cross Plains and Sun Prairie.
So some of the really upper-scale housing on the west side, because of a very poorly drafted state law about 20 years ago separating attachments from annexations. Right. There's land that is within the city, but from the school's perspective, it's in Middleton Cross Plains.
And vice versa. There are a number of areas that are in the Madison Metropolitan School District and are part of us, and an equal part of us, that aren't in the city of Madison. Fitchburg obviously being the largest. About a third of the students in Fitchburg go to the Madison School District. But some very long-time traditional places, Maple Bluff, Shorewood, several townships, are part of our school district too. So the two are completely separate municipalities with completely separate boundaries, although about 85% of our school district is coterminous with the city of Madison.
Now, do households that send children to the Madison School District that live in Fitchburg, will they vote in this referendum and pay the taxes?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. There is no difference among the people who are part of the Madison Metropolitan School District. You're a part of our school district. They pay the same taxes. They get to vote the same way that everybody else does. Yeah.
What happens if this fails?
If this fails, the plan is that we would completely reboundary the west side. We look at 5 years, and the reboundary that we have drawn, and we have not been able to redraw a boundary that will allow us to keep the same kind of programming on the west side in our schools. There just won't be enough seats. So we will have to not only change boundaries to relieve this for a little while, but also over that five-year period of time, we'll have to do some pretty serious programming changes that could affect class size, could affect, instead of having an art room and a music room that can be set up that way that the art and music teachers rotate around, we call it art and music on a cart. They actually move from classroom to classroom because we have used their classrooms for regular classes. If you look out over the five-year period of time, there just aren't enough seats there to keep things the way they are. So that would certainly, I think, be the result of the referendum failing.
And to me, that's unacceptable. As a school board member, and you know, if the referendum does fail, I do believe the board will have to sit down and really have to talk about what areas we would like to go into, and you know, those decisions that the superintendent just talked about, you know, again, to me, just they don't feel right on an educational front. I believe that our community can do better. We know that space is at a premium. Shifting kids over to the east side doesn't alleviate the overcrowding on the west side that is happening and that's going to happen. So there's just no short-term solutions that can be looked at. And one of the things that when I was running for the board a couple years ago that the board was really knocked hard about is long-range planning. This is a long-range plan when we look at building facilities, adding on to facilities. It's a long-range plan, and I think this will serve our district well.
I think one of the important things that was in the video, if you remember Brad Murphy, who was the city planner, talking about that, in our school district, to the far west side of town, there will be an additional 13,000 homes. To us, that means 5,200 additional children, K-12, that will be located that we do not have today. So this is really a matter of growth over time this is designed to deal with.
Yeah. Although, you know, the idea of mixing art and music, that's a pretty 21st century kind of idea. I mean, we've already got music videos. We have music art. You know, I think, you know, it may be cutting edge stuff. Don't knock it down.
They still won't have room. That's the problem.
Okay. Yeah. Now, if it goes, if the referendum on November 7th passes and we get a new school in Linden Park, what will be the process for naming it?
The board has a process.
Yeah.
We do have a board policy that directs how to name a new school. We actually seek names from the community. There is a committee that looks at that and takes, as my recollection is, takes three names to the board. People can propose names, and then I feel absolutely confident, based on having named several schools over my career, I feel absolutely confident that it will be controversial.
Yes. No, see, I'd like the person with the biggest check to, you know, get that.
I think
that
we should be selling naming rights.
Well,
what is wrong with that?
We do have that policy on the books, yeah. But one step at a time. Let's make sure this referendum passes on November 7th, then we can move on from there.
Okay. And again, if people have questions about the referendum, they can go to the website. There's a wealth of material on the website. Give that address quickly before we go to break.
MMSD.org for the district. And then if they would like some additional information, We have MadisonCast, C-A-S-T, .org, if they would like some additional information.
So remember, in addition to the constitutional amendment and the advisory opinion on the death penalty and a governor and a senator and a member of Congress and the legislative positions, we also have a very important school referendum, so don't forget to vote on all those on November 7th. We're going to take a short break and be back with Art Rainwater and Johnny Winston, and we hope your calls at 261-9114. It's Access City Hall. Please stay with us.
Your target, the seniors. Your weapon, the phone. Your objective, their bank accounts.
Seniors have had their identity long enough.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. It's hang-up time, folks. With my booklet, seniors will know what to say to make you crooks go away. Look.
Well, if you can't mail me the information, then I can't talk to you.
Get my free brochure and learn what to say to make unscrupulous telemarketers go away.
You're not being rude.
You're being shrewd.
Yeah.
Buenos días, les habla su servidor Pedro Muñoz. Tenemos el placer de anunciarle un nuevo programa de televisión dedicado a nuestra comunidad en Madison, La Conexión Latina. Este programa está patrocinado por el Canal 12, este canal Madison City Channel. Por favor, no pierda esta magnífica oportunidad de estar al tanto en temas de interés a nuestra comunidad. Temas como de migración, de trabajo, de educación y acceso a las viviendas y el desarrollo económico. También presentaremos temas de las artes latinas aquí en Madison. De esta manera podremos resolver los problemas difíciles que nos enfrentan, pero también compartiremos en el disfrute de todo bueno que nuestra comunidad ofrece. Nos vemos los miércoles a las 6 de la tarde, los domingos a las 8 de la mañana y a las 5 de la tarde. Hasta entonces y muchísimas gracias.
And we are back with School Board President Johnny Winston, Jr. and School Superintendent Art Rainwater. Your calls are welcome at 261-9114. And Joe from the West Side has availed himself of that opportunity and joins us now. Joe, what is your question or comment?
I guess I'm just trying to understand when the developers of these proposed projects are proposing these projects, what impact they are, or how much of their profits are going to be funneled into building these new schools, if any?
Okay, thank you.
There is a Supreme Court ruling in the state that prevents the levying of impact fees. So the developers of the property will not put any money into the schools.
There's some park dedication money and some other thing that goes to some city activities, but nothing that can go directly to the school system.
Nothing goes directly to the schools.
And I think that's why it's really important that our school district and city staff and planners work together so that, you know, when these areas are growing and they're being developed, there's a plan in place. And I, with this referendum on November 7th, there has been a plan, and the city has been in full contact with the school district and working with the district to look at the entire picture. And, you know, it's unfortunate there, you know, there's no impact fees at all, but that's why we have to work together to make sure that this growth, that the schools grow along with the growth that's happening in the community.
But we do also plan these buildings in these areas jointly with the city, and we do take advantage of and generally plan parks in conjunction with our schools. So it really increases the amount of green space and the amount of play space that we have for the school, because part of that will be parkland. So from that standpoint, we do benefit. And we work very closely with the city in kind of planning those so that they work together in an individual neighborhood.
I was still on the plan commission when Chavez was being planned as part of the West Side neighborhood plan, and it is, there's a lot of interrelationships. Mm-hmm. But really this just reinforces something that the mayor said
2 weeks ago that the biggest issue is growth, and
right.
and it has so many different permutations and aspects of it that you know people don't think of. Well, it's going to affect the school district
right.
just as much as it affects the fire district, as
right.
as the police system and everything. Let's talk about some maybe non-monetary, non-fiscal items because the people's
that
eyes sometimes
they're
different.
Because I mean, the state has made it so easy for you to manage the school system with revenue caps and qualified economic offers and all those delightful things. Let's talk about wellness. The school system recently adopted a wellness policy that has a lot of aspects, including getting rid of soda machines in the schools. How's that working?
Well, we spent a lot of time on it. The wellness policies are actually required by federal law now. So it's one of the little-known parts of No Child Left Behind. But every school district has to have a wellness policy, and it's really to try to emphasize us modeling and teaching children good nutrition, and it's really geared toward the childhood obesity epidemic that is prevalent in our country right now. Our wellness policy tries to address both parts of that, which is that we are teaching nutrition, that we are teaching children what to do, and that we're also modeling what's good nutrition in the schools. We spent a long time on it. We actually had a large group of people who worked on it, and it's been back to the board now a couple of three times.
Yeah.
There are certainly parts of it, as there are with any of these kinds of policies, that is controversial in terms of some of the things that have been a very integral part of schools for many, many years, soda machines being one of those. As you know, our major soda vendors in the country have now agreed that they will not sell anything but diet soda and 100% fruit juice and water to schools.
This is something that Bill Clinton got them to agree to just the other day.
Yes, and that's really a major step. But there will continue to be vending machines in our schools that will sell milk and water and 100% fruit juices and those kind of things.
So I think they should just be selling Diet Red Bull. Just make teachers' life really easy.
Yeah,
some seriously caffeinated.
That would get
they came from you.
That would get a lot of support from our teachers.
Yeah.
Are you seeing serious health concerns and sort of some attendant emotional concerns from an increase in childhood obesity? Is this a serious problem in the Madison School District?
Well, I don't think we're any different than any of the rest of the country. I certainly think that our whole country is experiencing that. I mean, it's pretty clear. I don't think we're any different than anybody else. We certainly have taken the wellness approach, and we are working with our food service people to lower the amount of fat, for example, and those kind of things are also part of this policy. We also have had a fairly substantial grant from the federal government to really rework our whole physical education program so that it's much more geared to exercise. Because to combat obesity, we're not just talking about nutrition and what you eat, but we're also talking about trying to create a lifetime of exercise. And so we've completely reworked our physical education program, or the process of doing that, so that it's much more geared toward lifetime fitness than the way we've been in the past. So I think that us and school districts all over the country are pushing on a number of fronts. But it's not just school districts. I mean, most of our kids eat one meal a day with us. They eat somewhere else the rest of the time. So it's got to be an effort on the part of all of us. And school districts certainly play a part of that, but so do parents and fast food restaurants and everybody else where children eat, and providing opportunities for children to exercise are the same way. So it's really a whole community issue, not just a school district.
Johnny, what do you see as the issues that the community may not perceive as coming to the fore, but you and the rest of the board see as coming over the horizon and presenting serious challenges in the years to come?
You know, we talked about funding. That's going to be a challenge. What we're seeing right now is maybe some of the residual effects of the revenue cap, where we have students, their programs competing amongst each other, the sports, art, people believing that, you know, you're not cutting enough for sports, you're not cutting enough from art. We're seeing that talented and gifted programs as opposed to heterogeneous classrooms, you know, we're seeing a lot of things, and as a school board, we're looking to address those issues, the issues of equity, and how do we allocate resources to schools, particularly schools that have a higher concentration of poverty or minority students. So, you know, we're looking at that, and you know, that's a great challenge for us coming up in the future. I do know that you know, we have a charter school that may come online regarding the arts. They could come online, and I know the district staff is working with those groups of people called the Studio School, and we're looking at that. So, you know, we're trying to be proactive. We're trying to be progressive in our education, also online learning. And I'm hoping the superintendent will roll that out fairly soon. But, you know, some of those things we're really trying to look at, because education is not one size fits all. So
philosophically, just speaking for yourself, if because the state mandates and restrictions, you can't buy and spend, you can't buy everything you want, you can't provide every service you want. Ultimately, you have to choose between A and B.
Right.
Just for yourself, if you get down to that final choice and it's for a talented and gifted program or a remedial program, helping the least advantaged or the most advantaged, what do you do?
I'm going to try to serve them both.
You can't. That's the question. You can't.
No, but I'm going to, though.
Okay.
We're going to figure out some way to do it. Yeah, we're going to figure out some way to do it. Well, not just go to referendum, but it is difficult, because you have 25,000 students in the school district that have all different types of abilities, and trying to serve them all in different classes or the same class is a challenge, and given our fiscal situation, but also our educationally as well. So, like, I'm going to try to do them both. Now, how we do it, I don't know, but I'm going to turn to this man to try to make that happen. So that's.
I mean, Stu, what you ask, and truthfully, relative to Madison, we are better off in many ways than a lot of school districts in Wisconsin. There are a number of school districts in Wisconsin who have already faced the exact dilemma that you said. And the truth is, those school districts have had to eliminate both. There are school districts in Wisconsin right now that are bankrupt. There are school districts in Wisconsin right this minute that are ready to close their doors and spread their kids out among other school districts. So the dilemma that you present to Johnny is a real dilemma. For us someday, without a change in the revenue cap, for us someday, that will be a dilemma that we will face. We haven't gone there. But there are school districts in Wisconsin who have already gone there. And they don't do either one of those two things. They provide a basic education to everybody. And that's it. And that's really what faces our state without a change. We're talking about taking one of America's great state public school systems, and it is. My God, if you've ever been anywhere else, what a fabulous place for your kid to grow up in. And we are dismantling that system one piece at a time, faster in some areas than others, but ultimately it'll be dismantled for all of us. And it is almost impossible to get them back. Look at California.
Well, we've already dismantled a good part of the University of Wisconsin. You know, it's time to work down to the elementary schools and the secondary schools. You've been superintendent for 8 years, about. Not implying that you are responsible for this, but is the quality of education and the experience that a child has in the Madison school system better, worse, or the same as it was 8, 10 years ago?
I believe it's better. It's not the same as it was. But right now, I believe it's better. I don't think it will be much longer. And I say that not really because of anything other than the fact that today we know a lot more about how children learn. And much of that work has been done at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. God, what a great place. I mean, what a jewel for this state. But much of that work has been done there. But we know today, 8 years later, much more about how children learn. And we're able to do things very, very differently. I just take our reading program, which is now used by about 125 school districts in America. our reading program is five times better today from what we've learned as we implemented and changed and learned than it was then. So our kids who are in the third grade today have received a much better reading education. Not that it wasn't good before, but they received a much better reading education than our kids, for example, who were in the third grade when I came here. Because one of the things that Madison has and has always had is tremendous staffs. We have great teachers and great principals and a great support staff at our central office that is able to make those kind of moves. So right this minute, I think we're better than we've ever been. But it won't continue that way because gradually we're having to take away those services that have brought us to that point. And what we've done to preserve that up until now is we've cut around the edges. We have 25% less central office administrators right now than we did when I took office. We're not doing anything any less. Everybody's just working a lot longer, it seems like. But we've cut there. We've cut around. We've raised fees. It costs a lot more today for a parent to have a child in our school district than it did when I took office. But we've been able, up until today, to preserve the quality of education that we've had. And we've done it by getting smarter. We've done it by doing things better. Those kind of things. But that will not continue.
We've got about two and a half minutes left. Johnny, you've only been on the board about 2 years. When you've been on the board as long as Art has been superintendent, you know, another 6 years or so, what do you think the state of the city school system is going to be?
Well, first of all, I was a student in the school district, kindergarten through 12th grade. Also been a parent in the school district.
So how has it changed?
Well, in terms of change, it's poor, a little darker. You know, the demographics have changed.
And with the city? And
yes, with the school district.
Okay.
Not the city,
the
school district. I still believe that we should be doing all the great things that the superintendent talked about in terms of our reading programs and math and science and giving students a good education. But, you know, what do I think we're going to be like in the future?
Before we go to the future, are kids today getting as good or better or not as good an education as you got in the Madison school system?
Well, I think they're getting a better education. It's hard for me to kind of, you know, because it wasn't that long ago. You know, it was 20 years ago when I graduated from West High School. But I believe that there's more of a support network around students these days than there was when I went to school. I believe that as a school district, there is a push because of people in the past talking about minority student achievement, the low class sizes. And I was fortunate. I had two parents in the home. My father was a police officer. My mother worked for the phone company. I mean, I was very fortunate. You know, books in the home, things like that. Other kids don't have that necessarily these days. But when there's more supports. There's more people talking about reading. There's more services for people than I believe when I went to school. But, you know, we just got to keep going. We definitely, National Merit Scholars, the school district has many of them, the ACT scores in terms of students. But we've got to do more. We know that, and we will continue to do more to keep pushing students in a positive direction. You know, Project Excel, getting kids the opportunity to get into talented and gifted programs and advanced placement courses. So we're going to keep working.
So you would answer affirmatively the president's question, is our children learning?
Our children is learning. They are learning.
That's we're about out of time. We've been talking with School Superintendent Art Rainwater and School Board President Johnny Winston Jr. 2 weeks from now, Mike Verveer and Noble Ray talk about Halloween. Stu Levitan for Access City Hall. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.